Everybody, this is Dr. Beter. Today is February 16, 1976, and this is my monthly audio letter number 9. According to federal government decree, this is the day that we are to observe the birthday of George Washington, although, of course, he was born on February 22nd. This is just a tiny example of the elaborate psychological warfare being waged on us by the four Rockefeller brothers, to subtly pry us loose from every tradition, great and small, that tends to make us resistant to their takeover plans. Their goal, after all, is to twist the bicentennial celebration of our nation's independence and use it to silence the Liberty Bell forever. It is up to you and me, my friends, to repair the crack in our Liberty Bell so that it can once again ring out loud and strong. Our beautiful Declaration of Independence was signed 200 years ago on July 4th, and ever since, as a reminder of our nation's birthday each year, the federal fiscal year has always begun in July. Every year, that is, until now. Last fall, on October 24, 1975, a chilling parody of our nation's founding document was signed, in Philadelphia, no less, to enhance its historical image. It is called the Declaration of Interdependence, for which our puppet President Ford served as the advance publicity man in speeches last spring. It calls on all Americans to turn our backs on our precious independence and, quote, narrow notions of national sovereignty, unquote, in favor of what is expressly called a new world order. And, my friends, you may be shocked to know that when our current fiscal year runs out on June 30, 1976, it will not be followed, as it always has in the past, by a new fiscal year beginning in July. Instead, there is to be a nameless transition period of 3 months, and all fiscal years thereafter are to begin in October. Why? To commemorate the signing last October of the new Rockefeller Declaration of Interdependence. Thus, July 4th, like Washington's birthday, is to become just another date on a calendar slipping quietly into oblivion, a relic of what our unelected rulers tell us is our obsolete, outmoded past. As we say goodbye to our Declaration of Independence and everything it has stood for during the past 200 years, we ought to ask at least, what is it that our rulers are so anxious to have us throw away? What kind of things does it remind us of that the Rockefeller brothers want so desperately to have us forget? The Declaration of Independence starts with the assumption that all men are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that the preservation of these is the entire purpose of legitimate government. Quote, to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, unquote. And this is so basic that, quote, when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Unquote. My friends, our real government today is not the one defined in our Constitution, which belongs to us. We are ruled today by the Rockefeller brothers and their empire of modern outlaws, pulling the strings and manipulating the actions of the visible governmental apparatus. So, what were some of the elements of that design to reduce them under despotism that led to the Declaration of Independence? Why do the Rockefellers fear to have us reminded of it? Just listen to a few examples of the grievances listed in the Declaration of Independence and think of any parallels you can see today, and the answer will be obvious to you. Quote, "He, the King, has erected multitudes of new offices and sent swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance." Unquote. What about our mushrooming federal bureaucracy? Another quote, "He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our constitutions and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his consent to their acts of pretended legislation." Unquote. What about the super-secret White House merge policy directive to Sovietize America, which I made public for the very first time last month in monthly audio letter number 8? What about the growing mountain of unconstitutional executive orders and oppressive regulations, which today constitute pretended legislation? Another complaint, quote, "depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury," unquote. Our forefathers fought and died in a bloody revolution over this, yet it is only one of the many safeguards which are specifically eliminated as a right in the secret new Rockefeller Constitution, which we are expected to accept this coming November. Perhaps most telling of all, quote, "He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war on us," unquote. My friends, you and I have been declared out of the protection of our own government by the Rockefeller agents who control it. As I have documented for you in previous tapes, every remedy provided by law for the redress of such grievances as the terrible Fort Knox twin scandal and other such serious matters has been blocked by Rockefeller agents and fellow travelers contrary to law. Most recently, for example, my associates and I took up a congressional challenge to state our specific charges about Fort Knox so that a grand jury might be impaneled to investigate them. The challenge was leveled by Congressman John B. Conlon of Arizona at certain of his constituents who dared to press him for action, and was an act of gross hypocrisy because Congressman Conlon knew full well that those individuals were in no position to present such charges and evidence themselves. But in an open letter to Congressman Conlon dated December 7, 1976, my colleague Edward Durell did exactly what had been asked, as reviewed in complete detail in my audio letter of last month. The result? The same studious silence and inaction from Congressman Conlon that has characterized his attitude toward Fort Knox for over a year. Whoever knows what is right to do and fails to do it, for him, it is a sin. The Rockefeller brothers are truly waging undeclared war on us. Your survival may depend on your understanding this fact. My three topics today are therefore, 1. How you are a target in the secret Rockefeller takeover of the United States Postal Service. 2. How the coming wars will affect you and your family. And 3, how you are to be a pawn in the game to make Nelson Rockefeller our first dictator. Topic number 1. 2 days ago, on February 14, 1976, Ford declared in a Florida campaign speech that he has had it with terrorism, and he proposed a death penalty for a range of terrorist offenses. Not long ago, Full-fledged terrorism was something most Americans tended to associate only with other countries. That couldn't happen here. But lately it is happening here, more and more. First there was the spectacular SLA case involving Patty Hearst. More recently, hundreds of grocery stores, banks, and whatnot have been bombed. On December 29, 1975, 11 people were killed and 75 injured when a bomb exploded in the passenger terminal at New York City's LaGuardia Airport. And you can rest assured that this is only the beginning. On January 13, 1976, FBI Chief Clarence Kelly helped get our bicentennial year rolling by predicting growing terrorism in America and assuring us all that the FBI is bracing itself for the worst. What you are not being told is that this new, frightening problem is a carefully orchestrated part of the undeclared war being waged on you by the Rockefeller Brothers. The terrorism itself is flaring up courtesy of your friendly CIA, which was behind the SLA and LaGuardia episodes, as well as many others of lesser note. Of course, after they have given enough examples for people to copy, they fully expect a few unstable individuals here and there to decide to do the same thing, and those amateurs will be the ones who will be caught from time to time and prosecuted with great fanfare. As usual, the Rockefellers first create a problem on one hand, in this case terrorism, and then stand ready to solve this problem for us on the other hand, in this case by way of a nationwide law enforcement apparatus which they are subtly bringing under federal control. This same technique is being applied in the related area of civil disturbances. Lodged within the so-called United States Department of Justice is a relatively new and little-known agency called the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, or LEAA for short. In the few years of its existence, LEAA has turned into very big business indeed and is busily converting segments of your local police all around the country into regional branches of our as yet unadmitted federal police force. In other words, our Gestapo. Of course, Gestapo has an unpleasant ring to it, so don't expect them to name it that. These special duty law enforcement teams are, for the most part, not yet well known by local citizens in each area. Lately, though, a few of them have received some unwanted publicity in scattered locations around the country, so keep your eyes open. One favorite type of unit is often called a Metropolitan or Metro Police Unit. These are typically formed as a cooperative arrangement among a group of communities. Each community contributes a few of its officers to the Metro Unit, which is given jurisdiction throughout all the communities involved. The LEAA assists in getting these going by footing the bill, or most of it, with your federal tax dollars for the first few years. Sounds nice, doesn't it? But it is the first step toward replacing your local policemen with regional cops who may feel much less attachment to you or your town. Worse yet, LEAA takes deliberate advantage of the natural tendency of most local police chiefs not to give up their best men, but to instead pawn off any troublemakers or less reliable men onto the Metro Unit. It's no wonder that in one area I was recently told about, such a regional police unit has already acquired the nickname of the Stormtroopers. The residents in that area have no idea how appropriate that nickname really is. Most of this is tied in directly or indirectly with the secret domestic Operation Garden plot, about which I warned you 7 months ago in monthly audio letter number 2. Most of this huge program, which has even involved domestic war games and maneuvers for several years is still well hidden. One exception, although its connection with Operation Garden Plot is not generally known, is the new breed of police usually known as Special Weapon Attack Teams, or SWAT, SWAT. They are the Green Berets of the police, and there is even a popular TV program to make them appear as heroes rather than the menace that they really are. True, they are frequently used right now in situations where their services may be beneficial, but this is little more than combat readiness training to ensure that they can be used for more serious purposes when the time comes. But you may say, these policemen are good Americans themselves. Surely they would not allow themselves to be used as tools in setting up a dictatorship. Of course they wouldn't, if they saw the situation that way. But Operation Garden Plot started nearly 10 years ago, in the wake of riots which were deliberately ignited in the mid-60s. All the indoctrination given to these special police units is given the slant that serious civil disturbances might rise again, and that at all costs they would have to be put down to save our country. This is a diabolically clever trap being laid for us by the Rockefeller brothers. We must stop the secret new Rockefeller Constitution before it is adopted. Otherwise, the streets of America will run red as frantic Americans try too late to reverse the so-called Second Revolution of the Rockefeller brothers. Of course, there may not yet be a regional police set up where you live, but something else is bound to be closer to home, the post office. If there is one thing Americans probably don't fear, it is the post office. We have been brought up to take for granted the safety, dependability, and convenience of the United States mails, and that is exactly what makes it such a viable tool for the Rockefeller brothers, now that it has fallen into their clutches. On May 28, 1969, the Postal Service Act of 1969 was introduced in the House of Representatives by Congressman Morris Udall of Arizona on behalf of the Rockefeller interests, who had been paving the way for it for 2 years. More recently, by the way, Udall has been leading the campaign to destroy your property rights by means of national land use legislation, and he has also rendered other useful services to the Rockefellers. Perhaps you have wondered how good old Mo Udall has been able to come from nowhere and receive such favorable publicity in his presidential campaign. Now you know. After an appropriate delay to suggest due deliberation, the Postal Service Act was passed overwhelmingly by both houses of Congress and signed into law by President Nixon late in 1970. At the stroke of a pen, the United States Post Office Department was abolished and replaced by the quasi-private U.S. Postal Service, just as the Federal Reserve Act in 1913 handed over control of our money to the Rockefeller interests. The Postal Service Act handed them the control of our most basic communication system, the mails. Like the Federal Reserve System, the Postal Service is now privately owned, yet it retains the powers and privileges of the federal government. And not only was it obtained at no cost to the present owners, aside from lobbying and propaganda expenses, but their investment bankers have already reaped over $50 million in brokerage fees for placing Postal Service bonds in the private market. When the Act was passed, there was lots of hoopla telling us that the new Postal Service would hold costs down while improving service. But postal rates have almost doubled already under the Postal Service, and just today the news was filled with statements that the Postal Service will just have to raise rates again due to its huge deficit, $1 billion this year alone. And as for service, the real plans of the new Postal Service Corporation, when it was created, were the exact opposite of the public relations promises. Plans contained in documents that are virtually unknown to the American people spell out a well-defined process by which postal service is to be progressively cut to the bone, not improved. And this process of Sovietization of our mail service is even laid out in the favorite Soviet style, a 5-year plan from July 1, 1971 to June 30, 1976. The mail service reduction plan involves 9 separate measures. Briefly, they are 1. Elimination of a 6-day mail delivery and manned window service. 2. Consolidation of mail processing centers. 3. Individual and group production standards. 4. New techniques for carrier office work. 5. Limiting mail delivery by requiring such things as cluster boxes at trailer courts and making only 1 attempt to deliver a parcel post. 6. Cutting back on basic services such as smaller post offices and the number of mail collection boxes, and no longer delivering parcel post and certified mail to your home. 7. Requiring you, the customer, to do more and more of the Postal Service's work, such as coding and sorting the mail. 8. Eliminating the use of air transportation for first-class mail within 750 miles. And 9. Establishment of so-called standardized postal facilities. So far, these measures sound pretty harmless, don't they? Aside from a little inconvenience, they probably don't arouse much concern on your part. That is because they were deliberately written to avoid arousing such concerns and suspicions. Each of these 9 measures is described by the Postal Service itself as a, quote, stratagem, unquote. The word stratagem, my friend, means a trick in war for deceiving the enemy. We, you and I, are the enemy whom the Rockefeller brothers intend to deceive with these bland descriptions of very important things. For example, consider stratagem 2, consolidation of mail processing centers. This implies centralization of mail processing, which will help render the search and seizure provisions I will tell you about in a moment more powerful. It is also tied in with stratagem 6, under which more than 3,000 post offices have already been shut down and more will be lopped off soon. Most, if not all, of the 9 stratagems for downgrading postal service imply severe cutbacks in postal service personnel. The dwindling personnel and lengthening lines in post offices these days are only a foretaste of things to come. Last year alone, over 15,000 postal service jobs were eliminated, and it is going to get worse as postal jobs disappear right and left. One might have expected appropriate labor spokesmen to put up a howl at such a plan, but not so George Meany, the FL-CIO president, who really works for the Rockefeller brothers, not his union members. He supported this so-called postal reform thanks to a yellow dog contract which gave the FL-CIO exclusive rights to represent Postal Service employees without their consent. But the mere downgrading of Postal Service, swindling of Postal Service employees, and the financial milking of Postal Service assets and public cash by the Rockefeller brothers take a back seat to far more dangerous and little-known provisions quietly written into the Postal Service Act. For example, suppose you were to write a note or a letter to a friend and then decide for some reason to take it to him yourself, or have another friend who is going that way drop it off for you. That, my friends, is a violation of federal law, the Postal Service Act of 1969. The Rockefeller brothers will brook no such competition with their postal monopoly. The only way you can legally take or send a letter by any means outside the Postal Service is to treat it as if you had mailed it, seal it in an envelope, address it for mailing,
put the amount of postage on that would have been required to mail it, then cancel the stamps in ink and write the date on the envelope. If you're willing to go through all that, then you may send or take the letter by some other means other than the post office. That is, unless and until paragraph 1401B of the Postal Service Act is invoked, which allows even this privilege to be suspended. The parallels between this situation and the Stamp Act, which helped bring on the American Revolution, are interesting, aren't they? This virtual prohibition on carrying letters out of the mail sounds petty and greedy, but it is far more than that. It's the key to a whole range of Gestapo-style controls for search, seizure, and censorship, which can now be activated at any moment. The law already exists. All that need be done is to suddenly start enforcing it. Under paragraph 1403 of the Postal Service Act, Postal Service officers can make searches for any such illegally transported mailable items. They can stop your car and completely search it. Or if they find your car parked anywhere, they can search it. If you have any package with you, for example, a birthday gift for a friend, all wrapped up with a fancy bow, they can open that up to see if you are smuggling a forbidden letter inside. Should an illegally transported letter be found in such a search, it may be seized. And if it was concealed in a package or parcel, the package is simply forfeited outright. Within 6 months after such a seizure, the Postal Service has the option of bringing suit or other proceedings against you. It need not return your letter to you in the event of a favorable ruling until 2 months after those proceedings are completed. In other words, that seemingly petty little provision about not sending a letter outside the mails, along with the other provisions dependent on it, opened the door for wholesale detainment and searching of anyone and everyone traveling anywhere off his own property. They constitute an extremely dangerous trap, ready to be used when the occasion calls for it, to restrict and control your movements and activities. Anytime you may be suspected of engaging in any activity the government does not want, a postal inspection may be imposed on you to look for damaging evidence. It is only one short step further, of course, for such evidence to be planted during the search itself. Unconstitutional, you say? Of course it is. After all, it is the product of the same people who brought you Adolf Hitler and who now seek to destroy our Constitution. And what I've said is not all. There's more. For instance, there are the provisions against what is called non-mailable matter. Right now, public acceptance of this concept is being promoted by applying it only to pornographic material. But later, its application can be expanded to include anything our rulers find objectionable, such as criticism of their policies. Furthermore, sanctions can now be imposed on anyone who uses a fictitious name or address, and advanced fingerprint techniques can be used by the Postal Service to track down those who have handled an anonymous letter. Should the President declare a national emergency, such as he may do soon or on account of the war that's planned in the Middle East, and as is mentioned 13 times in the secret new Rockefeller Constitution, everyone will be required by executive orders now in effect to register at their post office just as aliens do now. You would then be on a very short leash. The Postal Service also is given other dangerous powers, such as the power of eminent domain, by which this huge private corporation can acquire your property if it so desires. So the Rockefeller brothers are weaving their Postal Service web larger and larger out of the public eye until the day they decide to put it to use to entrap us all as a part of their undeclared war against you and me.